Blog Talk Radio. This broadcast of the PJC Media Network seeks to present wholesome, thought-provoking, and entertaining content. However, the views expressed by the hosts of PJC Media are theirs and theirs alone. They do not reflect the views of this network or its affiliates. Please utilize listener discretion.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. Each week, we feature different topics concerning issues that sometimes can be difficult to talk about. These issues concern children and adults who may be autistic, have Asperger's, or have mental disorders of any kind. We will discuss law enforcement and how they interact with these persons. Now, let's start the show.
Well, good Friday, everybody. Welcome to another Friday episode of the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. I'm your host, Macy O. Coleman, and joined by the hostess with the mostest, Miss Jenny White. How are you today, Jenny White?
Yes, yes, yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. We're going to talk a little bit more about, we had International Women's Month last month, but this is the last Friday in March, we're going to cover mental health among African-American women.
We're so almost half in a year.
What'd you say?
We're almost in a half of a year.
Yeah, 3 more months we'll be in half. We're a third of the way. We're first quarter.
Yeah.
First quarter. So it's going by pretty fast. But, yeah, we're going to talk about mental health among African-American women. And, you know, how often have you heard the term strong black woman? You know, anyone can experience mental health issues. There is no group, gender, sexual identity, race, or cultural belief that can prevent it from occurring. Black women experience societal demands, family demands, when they're overwhelmed and become expressive, they can be labeled the angry black woman. So we'll address some of these mental health issues that black women deal with and some ways to address them. So what do you think about that? You dealt with mental health issues, being a strong black woman?
No.
Okay, well, that's good. Huh?
I don't want to, I don't most of the time like to be talking about it. It's really, really something, you know, when that goes on, that's some serious stuff. It really is.
Yeah, you know, some of the research that I did, you know, in talking about this is what is the black girl's guide to healing emotional wounds? And it kind of said, I'm tired of being in bad relationships. I'm bitter about past hurts. I want more out of life, but don't know how. I'm tired of being a part of drama. I spend too much time in my head overthinking. I'm sensitive and easily offended. I don't feel loved by my parents. It's hard to find a group of trustworthy friends to do life with. I hurt the people that I love. I'm not happy with how my life turned out. I don't feel good about myself. So it says, if you said any of these things, then you're in the right place. So we're going to be talking about black women and mental health issues. And, you know, sometimes that can be start with childhood traumas, you know. So it's just a whole array of things that we can explore. And, it, you know, it'll go into different signs and things that we will be able to address. So we'll get started with the state of mental health of black women, and this is clinical considerations. And this is from an article. What'd you say?
If you want someone to push the number for one, if they wanted to say anything or ask a question.
Yeah, if anyone wants to, you know, chime in and you know, give some of your experiences, if you're a black woman dealing with mental health issues or know someone that is, you know, or that has dealt with some depression or anxiety or any of those things, then definitely, you know, feel free. But I'm not a black woman, so, you know, I can only tell you what they say about you. Well, I've lived around black women all my life, and so I've experienced mental health issues dealing with black women myself, so I understand. But if you want to press the one and chime on in, we'll bring you on in. But just from a clinical perspective, reading an article that was written a couple years ago, a special report on minority mental health, is just saying that black women face significant disparities in mental health care. Understanding why these differences occur requires an appreciation for not only the multiple roles that black women play in society, but also for the racial and social injustices they have historically faced. Notably, the outlook for black women often depends on the perspective. Some mental health providers believe that they are some of the most disadvantaged people in the United States, often simultaneously experiencing racism, sexism, and at times financial inequality. Others believe that this same concept makes black women one of the most resilient groups around. There you go with the strong black women. Y'all resilient. Both may be true in different settings. Consequently, it is important to navigate these concepts carefully to understand the state of mental health of black women and to optimize treatment outcomes. All right. There are some stigma and disparities. And since women experience depression at rates twice that of men, society may expect the percentage of black women receiving care to mirror that of white women. However, black women are only about half as likely to seek care. Why these numbers are so different needs to be explored. Because historically, studies have shown that black individuals are less likely to seek and subsequently accept mental health care secondary to concerns regarding stigma. For example, black women diagnosed with postpartum depression are less likely to accept medication recommendations and therapy. Although this difference in participation in care is often attributed to stigma, recent data show that stigma is not one of the main reasons that black women do not seek help. Instead, their willingness to seek care often depends on their prior experiences with mental health treatment. Identifying barriers to care in a timely manner is important because as depression severity increases, black women become less likely to pursue care. One key component required to reduce disparities in participation in care is acknowledging that different messaging is required to form a therapeutic alliance with the patients. And this is not an issue unique to the United States. Similar issues and disparities of care exist for black women living in other countries. I mean, you know, there have been times and probably still now where, you know, doctors have refused to give black women medication because they felt that they had a higher threshold for pain. And I remember you telling the story of, you know, going to deliver your children, and the doctor said you didn't need any medication. And you said you delivered all four of your children naturally, right?
Yeah.
Jenny White? Oh, okay. Well, I'm just trying to state the facts. But,
yeah.
So, you know, cultural sensitive care. If the stigma is not the limiting factor, what is creating barriers for Black women who require mental health interventions? It's important for psychiatrists to identify these barriers, since acknowledging them will improve the physician-patient relationship when caring for Black women. One significant barrier is access to health care providers. According to the American Psychiatric Association, Black clinicians represent only about 2% of practicing psychiatrists and 4% of psychologists providing care. This disparity is further compounded in psychiatry subspecialty training programs such as substance abuse fellowships. So it's hard to find, you know, a Black clinician, whether it's a psychiatrist or a psychologist, because there's so few of us. And, you know, it would be best recommended for us, you know, or Black women, to be able to find someone that can relate with what they're experiencing. So Black individuals are more likely than white individuals to receive diagnosis with poor long-term outcomes. For example, schizophrenia is more likely to be the diagnosis assigned to Black patients compared with their white counterparts when patients present with similar symptoms. Often, the differential diagnosis for these patients is vast and includes unspecified psychotic disorder, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or schizoaffective disorder, to list a few possibilities. The messaging to the patient and their families, as well as the staff acutely caring for them, is important. Psychotic symptoms deemed secondary to schizophrenia often result in higher incidence of seclusion, restraints, and involuntary commitment. They're committing these people because they think they're crazy. So what we'll do is, if you want to chime in about any of your experiences as a Black woman dealing with Black women, feel free, push the one. We will go to a case study for a lady by the name of Lydia. We'll call her Lydia. She's a Black woman, age 35 years old, with a prior psychiatric admission for depression following a relationship breakup while attending college. She was started on antidepressants, completed college, and subsequently discontinued her medications. Lydia remained euthymic until the COVID-19 pandemic, when she found herself at home with two children who were participating in virtual learning while her partner continued to work outside of the home. She frequently watched media coverage related to the murder of George Floyd, and at some point began to believe that every time she heard any type of loud bang, the police were killing a Black man. This created such distress that she ultimately presented to the emergency department not once, but twice. During Lydia's first admission to inpatient psychiatry, her family was informed of a possible diagnosis of schizophrenia. She was discharged on an antipsychotic, but shortly thereafter, Lydia again became acutely ill. She was subsequently admitted to a second hospital. There it was determined that she had severe anxiety, likely preceding what became a brief psychotic disorder. Lydia was started on a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor and a second generation antipsychotic medication, and her symptoms resolved. Weekly outpatient therapy was added to the treatment regimen, and she was followed in an outpatient clinic for the next year without recurrence of symptoms. But like many black female patients with mental health issues, Lydia saw a potential family member or close friend in George Floyd. In the aftermath of his murder, we as black women or black women feared for your own relatives. And it affected black women in a way that people of most other races could not fully relate to. It's possible that the patient presented differently during her second 2020 admission. However, it is also possible that the discussion among the patient, her family, and the second treating physician, who also was a black woman, allowed them to share more pertinent details about Lydia's symptoms. A better understanding of potential underlying triggers for her presentation also provided hope regarding her overall prognosis. So, you know, just taking that case study of Lydia, it just goes to say that, you know, her as a black woman during the period of time during COVID, she was really dealing with a lot of different symptoms, just based on looking at George Floyd coverage, you know, a lot of the Black Lives Matters coverage, a lot of the racist rhetoric that was going on with Donald Trump being in office, and a lot of the racist white people going from Black Lives Matters to All Lives Matters to Blue Lives Matter. So, I mean, you know, I think everybody got a little stir crazy during COVID, you know, especially when we couldn't go outside, you know, couldn't go to work. Wasn't anything to do. Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, went through some mental things. And some people dealt with it differently. The patient relationship. This case study highlights the importance of culturally sensitive care. So black female providers are a small but powerful group. They've achieved great success, but many black female providers have felt additional weight, especially during the pandemic. The Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, and prevention surveys have indicated that rates of anxiety and depression increased in all age groups during the pandemic. You know, survey numbers also highlighted the increased mental health needs of black women during this time frame. Compound these psychosocial stressors with those magnified by the ongoing traumas experienced by the murder of George Floyd and by countless other black Americans victimized by unjust policing practices and structural racism. And the result often is that people of color seek clinicians who look like them and presumably share a common belief system. You know, we think that, you know, and we hope that, you know, someone who shares our skin color shares our experiences. I mean, to go to the extreme, Clarence Thomas would not be one of those people. We'd have to give him over to the white people. But but this cultural sensitive care in a doctor-patient relationship is important and has an impact on care and outcomes in other disciplines beyond psychiatry, including pediatrics, obstetrics, and gynecology, you know, and, you know, it'll take my wife to tell the story of when, you know, she was pregnant with one of our kids and they had her in a birthing suite and they ended up changing the womb. And she felt that that had some racial tendencies when they did that. So, for instance, the mortality rate of black babies for black babies decreases by nearly 50% when cared for by doctors of the same race. Wow, I'm going to say that again.
Heard that, but yeah, I heard that.
Okay, hey, Lucy, how you doing?
I'm here, forgive me.
No, that's good. Somebody chime in.
Yeah,
all
but
right.
I heard that.
Yeah, so, you know, the mortality rate for black babies decreases by nearly 50%. Now, that, I mean, that's a lot. When cared for by doctors of the same race. Similarly, black women are also 3 to 4 times more likely than white women to die from complications related to childbirth, a disparity that persists even when accounting for socioeconomic status. Presumably, increasing the number of black obstetricians and gynecologists would decrease morbidity and mortality in this cohort, although additional studies are needed to determine definitively if racial concordance between physician and patient plays a direct role in maternal outcomes. Such concordance has been shown to influence patient-physician communication and perceptions of care, both of which are important factors in overall health outcomes. So what are your thoughts about that, Lucy? Like you said, you've heard those stats before.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I remember reading that some time ago that it helps when the delivery person is of the same, you know, on your side.
Right. Right.
That's what I heard, yeah. And they have a little more confidence too. But,
yeah,
I don't think that we have that many males going into being a doctor or, you know, a gynecologist. I don't think we have that many now. That's what I was concerned about.
Well, not necessarily males, but, you know, people of...
Yeah, it could be a woman. Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, black people in general, you know. But when they say people of color, you know, for this particular instance, you know, we're talking about African Americans as opposed to just, you know, people with brown skin that could be Indians, Asians, or anybody else, you know, that's non-white. But, you know, like they say, of course, it's unrealistic to think that all black patients will be suitably matched with clinicians with similar racial and cultural backgrounds.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I mean, you know, you could be economically from a low-income background, and your physician could be economically from a more, you know, wealthier middle to upper-class upbringing and may not be able to relate with you at all. You know, y'all both black. But your experiences are, you know, are totally different. So, yeah, it's unrealistic to think that all black patients will be suitably matched with clinicians with similar racial and cultural backgrounds. But what this means is that we would need additional support. Although there may not be shared historical perspective, it's imperative that all clinicians try to understand cultural differences. And I don't know if they're teaching that in, you know, in medical school, racial sensitivity, because anything dealing with race, you know, the bad word, DEI, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion, you know, is a new word for nigger, you know, black. So just like, I mean, you know, they got all these code words, just like, what was it before that? It was critical thinking or so race and culture are key components to how our patients relate to their doctors, but many other components are integral to providing culturally sensitive care. It's important not to presume or to understand the lived experience of patients. It's important not to presume to understand.
So are you saying that there are more black women than the other colors
No, we're just talking about black women in general, and there not being a sufficient amount of physicians, psychiatrists, and psychologists to help them deal with, to help you all deal with, you know, mental health issues that you may have. We're just saying that it's a very low percentage, you know, 2 to 4% out of 100% are black.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, so two out of, you know, 2 to 4 out of 100, you know, so it's not a whole lot to choose from. So instead, it may be necessary at times to admit a lack of insight. Instead, it's not, you know, they say it's important not to presume to understand the lived experiences of patients. You know, you can't assume anything. So instead, it may be necessary at times to admit a lack of insight. Simultaneously, it will be necessary to commit to learn more and combine this new knowledge with one's current skill set and developing an appropriate treatment plan. These extra steps help identify cultural beliefs and leverage them in treatment interventions, which is extremely important. Now, that would take a very, I don't even have an adjective for it, but, you know, for a white physician to, you know, have a black woman, you know, as a patient that's dealing with different issues, mental health issues. And it may be like in the case of Lydia, you know, the case study we just went over, her hearing loud noises, you know, she you know, automatically assumed that it was, you know, somebody was killing a black person, you know, because it was just inundated on the news every day. So, I mean, you know, it was just bad news, you know, bad things happening to black people every day. And so with that being said, you know, she was having issues. And someone white would probably have a problem with understanding that, not having that experience, not being pulled over for driving while black, you know, not having those issues of being racially profiled, not even having a relative that has dealt with, you know, some issue of some kind, some racial issues. So, you know, having a white physician, it would be, you know, maybe very challenging for them to identify with a black patient, and therefore the extra steps that would help them to identify with the culture, you know, would take a whole lot of work. And if you got somebody like that, then it would be great. I mean, it would be a beautiful person, you know. So let's see. Did anybody want to chime in, give your 2 cents, say hello, say something? If not.
Besides me?
Right. Besides,
I would like to. I would like you know, bringing back memories. It's bringing back memories. I remember my mother; she had a, you know, serious breakdown. But Zola, she was pregnant with Zola, okay, and that's the baby girl in our family. And so once she had the baby, and all of that, and so one day my father came home, and he said, "Oh, where's the baby?" And my mother said, "Oh, she's out there in the garbage can, and she kept cooking." And he sat down and he said, "The garbage can, you know, that's where we lived in Mack and McClellan, where them rats as big as the garbage."
Okay, right.
He said, "Did you say the garbage can?" He got up and ran out in the backyard, ran out, you know, and there was Zola laying as a newborn, laying, sucking her finger.
Wow.
He knew now he had to watch her more, you know.
So your mama was going through something, huh?
She was going, you know, and Zola and I, we talk about that even now. And what's strange about it is that Donnie was telling me recently, you know, people that, "Mama, you don't know what a woman goes through when she has postpartum depression." I said, "I don't care what you're going through, postpartum depression or whatever. You still got to work and take care of them kids." So, "Mama, you don't understand, you know." I've had mine, because I don't have that unless I didn't know if I had it, whatever. I got depressed over what I was in, you know. But I said, but that still does not negate the fact you have to take care. She said, Mama, you don't know what postpartum depression do. And I was trying to tell you and all of that. I said, yeah, but you kept still having them. You know, one of them deals. Postpartum depression, she said, you need help. Then I was reading something about it, and they were saying that it was at that point that a woman does need some type of psychological help to help her through that time, you know, and all of this. But she kept saying, Mom, you don't understand. And I said, listen, but you still keep having them. You don't go back and get another one, you know, another one. And all this, you know, we had to going back and forth. But she kept talking about this postpartum depression. I said, I feel like that's just something you're saying because you don't want to get up and do what you're supposed to.
Okay.
She said, then I have to get up and go to work. And a lot of times I can't sleep. If I'm working a night shift, I get used to being up at night. So then, and then I just can't go to sleep till probably 5 in the morning because I'm usually up during that time, you know, all this stuff. I said, listen, that's all a part of life. You have to make yourself, you know, and I would go, I said, look, the way I understand it, you still have to work and take care of your family. And you seem like you want to dwell on the fact of what the problems, that mental problems that you have. And she said, Mama, these are real problems. She kept saying, I said, then why don't you go and see someone, you know, all this. Then she gets quiet. Postpartum depression. Then I started reading about it recently, and I said, oh, I see what they mean. They do need help during that time. I said, well, go to somebody and get some help. You know, you have to do that. When I remember when I had with my kids, I had this Dr. Daniels, who was a psychologist, you know, the top rank. And I took them all. When I couldn't find somebody to work with my boys and my kids, I took them all to him. And my Magellan insurance paid for it because I was still working. And I mean, but he helped during the time, especially with the boys, with Luke and Darnell. He helped, especially with Darnell, because he was going through some changes. And he worked with him and worked with him and worked with him. I was going every week, making sure they had someone to talk to. Now we're trying to go through a minister.
Well,
who
can
is
I
centered.
Ask you?
Go ahead, lady.
They still got any problems?
They still have problems, yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. They still have problems and stuff, especially Darnell.
Well, a lot of, you know, we have another person here. I'm assuming he knows something about it.
Okay, then fine.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Who's there that wants to talk about that?
All right, caller. What's your name? And you have a comment or a question?
Well, maybe it was
Hi.
Too long.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we hear you now.
I'm sorry?
Hi. Hi. I just wanted to chime in. I heard you're talking about mental health with Black women. First, my name is Fran, so I apologize for not giving my name. But I think there's a stigma associated with mental health and in our community.
There
and for that reason, there are a lot of times we're not getting the support and the help that we need. Black women deal with stress throughout life. From work, from family, from society, Black women are dealing with stress, and that shows up. It can be situational. Does not mean that you're depressed clinically, but stress can cause depression. Stress can increase anxiety. So I think when people say mental health, there's a stigma, and you don't want to be tied to that stigma to say I'm depressed. But you could be feeling down because you got a lot going on. We just went through COVID. You could have lost someone and experienced grief that can cause depression. But that doesn't mean you're clinically depressed. And so when we are able to identify that, okay, it's not necessarily a real mental health issue. It could be situational, so let me get in front of it so it won't become clinical. And that's where I think there's a gap in how we're engaging.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're told, you still got to function. And so that can show up in your health. high blood pressure. It can show up in your health being overweight. Yes. It can show up in your health not being able to sleep. So those are all some effects of dealing with stress. So I just want to chime in on that because I think with that stigma, we are definitely going on, we're not getting the support that we need to deal with what we deal with every day.
That is true. I agree with that. Yeah. I think another word you can look at is reciprocity. You're giving out, giving, and nothing is coming back that's positive to you. And it strains the relationship. I agree with that. But you know what? But it's even higher when people tell me, well, you're a Christian. You say you saved and all of that. And you don't want to be a stigma on what you believe and stuff. So you try to, you know, thrash it out as best you can. But it has an effect on you. Yeah, I can agree with that. Yeah. Definitely agree with
but
that.
But even with that's where you can have your faith. But there's support, just like there's medical support. Being a Christian,
yeah.
You still have doctors to help heal your body. So when you have something going on emotionally, there's someone that is there to support you to help you develop coping mechanisms or identify, go beyond or grow beyond what you're experiencing. So I there are faith-based therapists. There are therapists that are based Christian therapists. So there's support there.
That is true.
Well, you know,
that's a very good point.
Yeah, those are some great points. I mean, you know, black women, you know, have dealt with, you know, not only the grief of, maybe losing a loved one, but also maybe childhood trauma, you know, maybe daddy issues, mama issues. And
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's just a matter of how do we deal with that? And then some things, you know, are generational, you know, they've been passed down from the generation. And so, you know, it's just a matter of how we treat our black women. And I think a lot of times, you know, black women don't always feel protected by black men. And I think that's, you know, that's probably a whole nother show. But I think
there will be a whole week of one.
Yeah, you said a whole week. But yeah, I think that's, you know, something that black women experience as well. And so with that, it can be stressful. And, you know, like the caller said, you know, stress shows up in different ways. You know, it can show up in your weight, you know, it can show up in, you know, sleepless nights. It can show up in your eating. So you know, weight, so there are signs, you know, of how the mental health thing shows up. I mean, you know, everybody deals with something. You know, there's no group of people or gender or sexual identity, race or culture that's excluded from, you know, dealing with mental health. But when we talk about black women, you know, especially black women in America, that's a whole different subject. You know, not only that, but what black women have had to endure, you know, during slavery, you know, during rape, having your family, taken away from you and sold, and you know, it's a lot.
Let me interject, because I think when you say mental health, people shut down. You have mental health and you have physical health. So you, when you say, how is your physical health? Oh, I'm in great shape. How is your mental health? Oh, my mental health is good. So when you accept that mental health is a part of your being, then people will probably be more able to grasp that this is, mental health is something that doesn't have to be stigmatized. because that's when you're going to the doctor now, they're doing a mental health assessment because they understand that you must look at the whole person, questions about how you're feeling. They're asking you, have you been down or have you been feeling, how are you sleeping? Those are some things that they gauge, and that's how they can assess what's going on with you emotionally. So there are some questions that are asked in your physical now. So you're looking at the whole person. So mental health is not a stigma. It is not. And I think that is just, if I could shout that from the rooftop within our community, I think it would make a huge difference. It is not a stigma. It is just part of who we are. A bio, psycho, social. Just like our social economics is a part of who we are. How your bank account looking? So you don't, that's no stigma there. That's all right. That's part of what makes us up.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that it's, you know, I don't know that, you know, many people are, you know, like you say, you know, you ask about, you know, how somebody's doing, you ask, you know, how they feel, you know, I think, well, you know, it all depends on who you're talking to and, you know, if you've seen some signs that maybe someone is acting differently, you know, maybe they're more withdrawn. You know, I had a friend who, you know, was going through some things, and during that period of time, you know, he'd be missing in action, you know, wouldn't return phone calls and just, you know, wasn't available. I guess, you know, he was dealing with whatever he was dealing with, you know, mentally. So, you know, people show signs. You just have to pick them up, you know, and sometimes you know, if you know someone well enough, then you can know, you know, and then, you know, some people go through suicidal ideations, you know, where they contemplate committing suicide because they're going through emotional things or mental things. So it's a whole lot to it. But we're going to keep this conversation going, but we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
We'll be right back after these messages.
If you are in need of life insurance, auto or home insurance, or need help in getting out of debt, call your helpful insurance agents at Prime Financial Services. Did you know if you add a child rider to your life insurance policy, you can add multiple children for the price of one, starting at $10,000 worth of coverage for under $10. Call today for a free quote at 313-293-0979. Mention you heard this.
Lions Clubs International is a service or membership organization of over 1.7 million members worldwide. It was founded in 1916 in Illinois. Much of the focus of the Lions Club's work as a service club organization is to raise money for worthy causes as first responders. The Lions Club motto is, "We Serve." Local Lions Club programs include sight conservation, hearing and speech conservation, diabetes awareness, youth outreach, international relations, environmental issues, and many other programs. The Lions acronym also stands for Liberty, Intelligence, Our Nation's Safety. For more information, contact us at LionsClubs.org.
Want to start a business or have tax issues? We know exactly how to handle your individual needs. We personalize each individual and give you the time required to focus on your needs. We audit you before the IRS does. The IRS is not on your side, but we are. We set up companies, do tax preparation, tax and retirement planning, bookkeeping, IRS audits, and reviews. Please call me, Deborah Mitchell, owner of Mitchell & Company, for a free consultation at 248-354-5122. And visit my website, MitchellTaxAccounting.com.
We're back with Let's Talk About It with Jenny White.
All right, we're back. We need some new commercials. But until then, you're going to hear the same ones. All right. So call some of these people. Call Prime Financial or call Linda Porter. She got good seasoning, good on everything but ice cream. So call some of these people. All right. So what we have here going on is we're talking about mental health among African-American women. And say, how often have you heard the term strong black women? Anyone can experience mental health issues, no group, gender, sexual identity, race, or culture, cultural beliefs can prevent it from occurring. And black women experience societal demands, family demands, and when they're overwhelmed and become expressive, they can be labeled the angry black woman. So what we're doing today is we're addressing these mental health issues and that black women deal with, and we're going to talk about some ways to help deal with them. So, all right, we kind of left off talking about several things, but what we're going to do is, in this particular instance, we are going to talk about normalizing the message so that, like the caller said, take away the stigmatism. So black women collectively breathed a sigh of relief when former First Lady Michelle Obama spoke about having a low level of depression during the first few months of the pandemic, and by revealing something that many women, especially black women, have difficulty sharing, she made talking about mood more acceptable. She also validated what many other women were experiencing. So now that Michelle Obama and several other high-profile women have discussed their struggles with depression, it is imperative that we continue with the necessary work to change the narrative for women of color who are now ready to talk about mental health and pursue treatment. So quite possibly, we would not fully understand treatments and interventions that are best for black women until more research is performed. Lack of trust in clinical trials, and at times, lack of trust in clinical trials, and at times in the entire healthcare system can predate the examples that are often cited, including the Tuskegee experiment and the harvesting of cells from Henrietta Lacks. To be clear, black population has been mistreated by the medical community for centuries. So the question now is, how do we earn the trust required to move forward and identify diagnostic and treatment interventions that work best for minority populations? So future direction, what should mental health professionals do to support black women's mental health needs moving forward? And the answer is multifaceted. They must first acknowledge that there is a need for cultural competency. Second, as providers, they must enhance the commitment to train a diverse workforce. They know that female and black clinicians are historically underrepresented in the field. Although we anticipate ongoing increases in women becoming psychiatrists, there is a need to support the recruitment and subsequent mentorship of minorities in the field. When caring for black women and black men as well, remember that there is not a one-size-fits-all or even one-size-fits-most approach. It's important to have culturally sensitive members of the hospitals, clinics, or outpatient practices who can help identify strategies for developing a therapeutic relationship and explain beliefs and cultural nuances. It's also imperative for organizations to understand the importance of employing a workforce with multiple team members who can contribute diversity of thought. Having a few providers or staff members of a different race or gender does not mean that a comprehensive treatment approach will be easy. Instead, it must continue to have tough conversations and engage in discussions related to cultural, racial, and ethnic differences. And if providers take this approach toward caring for each of their patients, Black women will continue to pursue care that meets their needs in a culturally sensitive manner, thus increasing the likelihood of a successful outcome. And a lot of this information was from Dr. Richards, who's the chair and medical director of the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Health at Sibley Memorial Hospital, as well as an assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. So that is it in a nutshell, talking about women experiencing mental health issues. Women are more frequently diagnosed with anxiety and depression. And women are more frequently diagnosed with depression and anxiety, and the taking of prescribed psychotropic drugs is also significantly higher, even if there is no difference with men with respect to mental health inequalities, diagnosis, frequency of visits to health care centers. All this points to the existence of a medicalization process of mental health in women. So,
you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's interesting what you're saying, because I know for my sister Zola, now, when we got ready, you know, during COVID, you know, when COVID hit, we were still taking care of my mother. She has her own apartment and stuff like that. But then the doctor said no. He wanted something to happen with her. She got sick. So they put her in, she was supposed to go into right here to the hospital, the nursing home setting. It was supposed to be for rehab, and I was thinking she's going to come home. The doctor said, no, let her stay, because she was close to, close to 89, 90 years old. We were getting ready to have her a 90th celebration or something like that.
Okay.
So he said, no, let her stay. I said, well, no, she's not going to stay here. And then I got mad with my sister. I said, because y'all trying to put her away. You're not going to put her here, you know, all this stuff. But then COVID hit. He said, no, let her stay here. Because she was trying to work her leg, her knee, you know, and all this. He said, no, let her stay here. But then they were interested, and when they looked at the medicine my mother had been taking, and so it was some type of mental medicine that she had been taking for a long time.
Okay.
And so the doctor said, what is she taking this for? And she said, Zola said, all I know is that's what the doctor prescribed for her. We give it to her to help her. He said, well, how long has she been taking this, and what for?
Wow.
And Zola told her, now my sister Zola, she said, well, she's been taking it since I have known, and I'm 60 years old now.
Wow.
That's what she said. So she's been on it to help her, you know. I tried to get help from my mother through a Christian psychologist. I found Dr. Forrest Stevenson. I think I shared this before. And he would talk to her. He would talk to her. And I was on the phone with that man, you know, trying to, you know, he was a Christian psychologist, okay? And he talked with her. And then finally, when I got the chance to meet him face to face, after some years of her going back, you know, talking with him and stuff, he said this. I said, Dr. Stevenson, I said, I'm Lucy Payne. He said, I'm so glad to meet you. This was years. He said, I'm sorry that your father do not realize how much your mother needs him. That's what he said. He don't realize.
Wow.
That's the statement that he made. But here she's been on this medicine for years. And so when the doctor, he said, what is she doing taking this, you know? She's been taking it for years to help her, help herself out and best. But anyway, long story short, what was this, about 2 or 3 years, you know, and 2020, I think she died. And, you know, because my brother Matthew stayed up on it. I mean, he was there. They went supposed to be going on there. He would go see my mother because that's the way he is and stuff. But she had been on that medicine all that time. Somebody's still prescribing it.
Now, do you think it was a medicine that she needed, or she
I think it was what she needed.
Oh, okay.
She needed it. She was going through a lot. A lot of times she starved herself until she was down to skin and bone. Then she would eat herself back up. All this stuff, you know. She couldn't find her way, you know. She couldn't find her way on her own. Yeah.
Say mom was going through some mental health issues, huh?
Oh yeah, she was. And we still kept her. A lot of times she'd be screaming and hollering. And so Zolan said they had to put her in the back room and let her stay there and scream and holler and stuff. Well, I tried to get help for her. You know, it was during the time that churches, the Colonel's Chicken came out. That's when it was really good, you know. And I said, Mama, I bought her some chicken and stuff. My mother got on my nerves so bad in the car, I took my chicken and threw it in the back of the car.
Yeah,
I'll never forget that. And then she sat down and ate her chicken because she's making everybody miserable around her. That's the way she was. Just feeling like she had no hope. No one understood.
Oh,
no one was there to bear her burden, you know. The church wasn't really a help at all. In fact, a lot of times church people hurt your feelings worse.
You're right about that.
They will hurt your feelings worse.
I tell you, Christians.
Yeah, they would do that. You know, so that's just some of the things I went through with my mother. And when I saw that when the COVID hit, she said, no, she's got to stay here. Because we couldn't go see her now. We couldn't go and help her.
Right.
We kept her apartment going for a long time, you know, hoping that she would be out. But, COVID hit and people just dropping dead.
Yeah, it was a bad time.
Yeah, it was a very bad time. Yeah. Very bad time. But I tried to find help for a city physician. They said, does she have a husband? We can't come. He's got to do it. My father wouldn't do it.
Oh, man.
I mean, she got on my nerves one time. It was so bad. And I shouldn't say this. I put my mother in the car, and I drove her to where his friends were. And knocked on there. I said, my daddy here? She said, yes, he is.
Okay.
And I said, daddy, here's your wife, and I'm going home.
Wow.
You know, oh, that's exactly where I found you.
Oh, that was so bad.
I mean, my father had a fit. You know, but he started staying home with her more.
Okay.
I was horrible. Again, I was really horrible trying to get some help for her.
Yeah.
Trying to get some help. Yeah. This was his responsibility.
I know, that's right.
So much for that, and I nearly got killed.
Yeah.
But yes, I did. I got desperate.
So he wasn't happy.
Help for her. So enough of that. You know, I'm glad to be alive to tell you about it.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we've all gone through something, and so have our parents. I mean, if anybody grew up during the Jim Crow period of time, you know, of course you dealt with some traumas. And during the Civil Rights period, you know, you dealt with some things. And depending on where you stayed.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, you know, white people didn't necessarily want you in the neighborhood.
They didn't
want you. Yeah, I mean, so if you bought a house, you know, you were subject to things. You know, when they were integrating the schools, you know, back in, what was it, the 50s, 60s, Ruby Porter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, during that period of time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all those traumas, you know, that people growing up with. And black women, you know, specifically have dealt with, you know, the, you know, doctors performing hysterectomies on women that didn't need them.
That's true. And sterilizing them.
Yeah, sterilizing the women, you know. And
you think you're going there for help and they sterilize you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you go in there for one thing. Right, you come out with a hysterectomy. And you're young, you know.
Oh,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there hasn't been a lot of trust established with the medical community either. And so, You know, and then the lack of us, you know, you can go in the whole hospital and, you know, only people, you know, you might see some black nurses, you know, and some black, you know, custodians, you know. But, you know, if you see a black doctor, you're lucky. Now, you can see a foreign doctor that might have some color in the skin. But if you see a black doctor, it's rare, it's very rare and far in between. So.
That is so, yeah.
Yeah, it's just what we have to teach these children.
The next generation, yeah. Sometimes I think we have tried to protect them from so much that they don't understand. They can't realize, you know. Like I've had one bishop, he said, my parents made us suffer. And that's so true, you know. But we try to protect them from a lot of things. And they walk right smack into it. Don't know it.
That's true. Well, Jenny White, what you got to say?
About the what you're talking about?
Yeah, you got anything to say? Because it's 9 o'clock, we had a good show talking about the mental health among African American women, and we're getting ready to shut it down.
I think it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
What did you say?
I said it's a wide open subject.
It hurts me to talk about that. That's why I don't say much. Because like I said, that's the reason why. But I have one thing to say. That I am in petition with no one. I run my own race. I have no desire to play the game of being better than anyone in any way, shape, or form. I just aim to improve, to be better than I was before. That's me. And I am free.
Well, I appreciate everybody tuning in. You know, I think we had a pretty good topic talking about, you know, the mental health issues of African American women. And stay tuned. You know, this is International Women's Month. So we took it out with a bang, and we'll be back with you next week with some interesting subject and topic that hopefully will be enlightening to your life and give you some value or help you out in some way, shape, or form. But Easter is Sunday, so this is Good Friday. So have a great weekend. And a good Sunday. And on that note, I'll see you later.
Thank you.
Okay.